Welcome to the Chinwag Live podcast. Chinwag is an online community for digital professionals, and Chinwag Live is our regular event series established to cast light on trends across the digital media industry. You can find out more information about Chinwag Live on our website, live.chinwag.com. To find out about future events, speaking opportunities, or to get involved in sponsoring our events, you can email us at live@chinwag.com.
This was recorded at the second Chinwag Live event, Mobile Metamorphosis, on the 26th of February 2007 in London, featuring on the panel Hugh Griffith, representing O2, Jessica Sandin, Senior Consultant and Head of Mobile Practice at Fathom Partners, Jonathan McDonald, Sales Director at Blick, Russell Buckley, Managing Director of AdMob Europe, and chairing the evening, Tim Green, Executive Editor of Mobile Entertainment Magazine. The event was produced by Deirdre Malloy of Chinwag, with podcast services provided by Lloyd Davis of Perfect Path Consulting. And now, a message from Dotmobi, the sponsors of Chinwag Live Mobile Metamorphosis. Four phones are sold for every PC sold. That means more people access the internet via mobiles than ever. Reach that audience with Dotmobi. Go online to visit dotmobi.mobi. That's dotmobi.mobi. In other words, dotmobi.mobi.
And so I'm very pleased to have four representatives from different areas here. We have Hugh Griffiths from Vision Advisor to O2, Jonathan from Blip, which is a mobile virtual network operator which is going to offer completely free voice and text in exchange for accepting advertising. That's aimed at 16 to 24-year-olds. Russell's here from AdMob. They serve banner advertising to websites. And Jessica from Fathom, which is a consultancy which has done quite a lot of work in this area. So I think we should keep these introductions brief. If you could just explain a little bit more about where you're from and how you fit into this area.
Hi, I'm Hugh Griffiths. To mention, I'm acting as advisor now to O2. I'm advising O2 Group strategy on mobile advertising, and we're about to launch a series of trials across each of the O2 territories in Europe.
I'm Jonathan McDonald, Sales Director for Blick. We'll be launching in the middle of this year, hopefully before the schools go back, to get the 16, 24-year-olds at the right time. And they opt in to receive information that's relevant to their lives from brands that they use and are interested in for offers and coupons and discounts and information that suits them, and in return that they have free calls, free text and free browsing.
Good evening, I'm Russell Buckley from AdMob. I'm a Managing Director of AdMob in Europe, and I've been involved in mobile marketing for the last 7 years for my sins, so it's great to find something which finally unequivocally really works. AdMob was started in January last year, and in our first 6 months we very proudly served 30 million ads, which we were very happy about. Our second 6 months saw us sell 1 billion ads, and our third 6 months, which we're halfway through now, we'll be doing about 2 billion. So unlike a lot of people in mobile marketing and mobile advertising, I can tell you here and sit here and tell you that it's actually really working, really happening, and this is really now going mainstream. This isn't just something which is going to be big, it already is.
Okay, my name is Jessica Sandin, I work for Fathom Partners. We like to call ourselves a strategic innovation firm. We help companies find new paths in new media and so on in terms of their strategy. We advise both media companies, mobile operators, technology companies and others, as well as brands, on their digital strategies. So we really have an insight into the industry from a lot of different aspects. As Tim said, we have done a lot of work in mobile advertising and mobile content in general as well. Personally, I've been within the mobile content and entertainment business since 2000 as a journalist and obviously now a consultant.
Right, so we're doing about 20 minutes of Q&A up here, and then hopefully you'll have some interesting questions to ask. So the first subject I really wanted to address is how much is this kind of a self-absorbed market, in the sense that most people are looking for mobile content products And they're already trying to find these products, and your advertising is helping them to get there more quickly. I don't know if I could talk to you first about this, Russell. Are you finding that most of the your clients are people trying to sell ring tanks? And, when do you think that the broader, more mainstream advertising industry is going to get involved with this?
Well, I certainly think it's true to say that most of the brands currently are in the sort of broader content, not just ring tanks, but obviously applications and downloads, etc. I'd say about 70% of them account for that today. But we've already got more mainstream brands coming in, and what they're looking at the moment, I think, is in the same way as 1995, 1996, people were saying, oh, it's about time we went and created one of those web things, and web page and websites, etc. I think people are beginning to say, brand managers, etc., I think it's about time we had one of those mobile website things. As we learnt 10 years ago, once you've got one, you need to promote it. And that's quite hard to do offline and via traditional newspapers or TV. Whereas it's much more natural for people to go and find that sort of content by just clicking on a link and going to it. So I think this year and next year, certainly, you'll see a big explosion of brands coming in, creating their own mobile websites. And I think that's when mobile advertising for big brands really starts to take off.
So which ones are you working with now outside of this sort of mobile consumable space? Can you give us some examples?
Adidas and Yellow Pages would be two good ones.
How does it work? What sort of products are they trying to... Is this a brand awareness thing? Are they actually trying to get people to download stuff?
Adidas are trying to create awareness for their mobile website, and Yellow Pages are trying to create downloads for their Java applications, which provides a permanent branding on their phone and reminds people to use their application.
How successful are they?
Well, it's a bit early to tell. I can say that we did a campaign in the last summer for somebody who's a brand who was trying to promote a mobile website, and it was a pan-European campaign, and we got 0.4% of their budget very generously, and the rest of it went into TV and traditional media, and we actually generated 40% of their traffic. So that kind of gives you an idea of how successful it can be.
And Jonathan, you're obviously, you're not concentrating. But
I am, I was thinking about what Russell said.
Inspiration sitting next to this guy.
You're in the sort of preparatory phase now, where yes. You're trying to talk to these major brands. Are they aware of the potential of mobile? I mean, I quite often come to these kind of events, I should do it now actually, and try and find out how many people actually come from the mainstream advertising agencies, and hardly anyone ever does. So is anyone here from... Yes. Oh, that's better.
They walk front.
Yeah.
Telling sign.
Are they kind of attuned to this opportunity, or are you mostly talking to, pure play mobile companies?
If we remove the term mobile and the term advertising from that question, and we look at what brands actually want and the advertisers actually want, what we've learned is that trackable return investment is a good thing. Knowing exactly who receives advertising and what they do with that advertising is a good thing. So that if they're an agency, they can report back to their client with actual stats rather than guesstimates. And if they're a brand, they actually know where their pound is being spent. Now if we put mobile and the word advertising back into that equation, I think certainly brands, especially the most forward-thinking brands, are starting to realise that mobile might actually produce those criteria. And certainly from Russell serving gazillion adverts and stuff shows at least some form of take-up, I think, to understate that point. What the question then is who is seeing that? Is it targeted to the person that's seen it in advance? And can a brand actually know that their pound is being spent in the best possible way? So the answer is yes. The brands do get that, because that's their biggest pain in the arse, is not knowing it. And whether or not they actually realise that through mobile advertising they can get that, I think that more and more are trying new media and new technologies, and I hope that people like the people inside this room may be able to actually help brands achieve the trackable return on investment and the actual change the profiling of the users in advance of advertising to them more and more and more. And it's no longer enough to say,
or we think 8 million people saw the advert, maybe 2% of them like it. I think that's not enough now, 2007. I think that's a bit 20th century.
I think in our experience with brands, I think it's, yes, it's good, great to be positive about what brands want to do in mobile, and I think there are certainly some brands that are very forward-thinking. But what we've been surprised about as well when we've been speaking to brands and also some advertising agencies is, in some cases, the understanding of what you can do on mobile and how the mobile phone works and what that means is really quite limited. And I think that's worthwhile remembering as well. Yes, we have really advanced brands like Adidas, which we also work with quite a lot. And they, you know, they've done a lot on mobile. They offer downloadable content and so on mobile websites. But that's not every brand. So I do think there's a huge need to educate the market around mobile and sort of get beyond the spending on, you know, a little bit of money on a trial campaign to actually move forward. And I think you're absolutely right, the tracking and the targeting is extremely important for that. But there's also, I think, for the mobile industry as a whole, there's an educational need as well.
I mean, quite often when you have these conversations, you get this mantra about the mobile being able to deliver really good targeting and demographic information about the users. But I was speaking to a major mobile content company recently, and they said that they were selling ringtones and wallpapers with a UK network. I think very discreet at the time. And they were trying to get the breakdown of the sales, different films, different wallpapers, ringtones. And the network said, they knew the total volume, but they couldn't break them down. And so, you know, sometimes this talk about how great the measurement is doesn't actually reflect real life, where you've got networks that have systems that are built around, you know, voice calls and not really content downloads. So that's one for you.
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember that mobile networks have been built on off the back of people making phone calls and sending text messages, and their data sources have been based upon selling those two products. Increasingly, they're looking at selling a wider range of products, but these are huge organisations. And consolidating those pieces of data to understand the browsing behaviour of a user, together with the traditional information we have, that networks have around users in terms of their name and address and the device, is not an easy thing to do. And I think that's a major challenge for network operators. I think to Jessica's point, it also is a major challenge for advertisers, because prior to the web, we didn't have banners and buttons and interstitials, and I think in the same way in mobile, we haven't yet discovered the mechanisms that will make advertising work best on mobile devices. Like Russell, you know, I've been in this business 7 years now in mobile, and I started out 7 years ago helping a company called Flytext, who were involved in mobile marketing, for 2 or 3 months before I started at O2. And we've come, you know, it's been a long time, a long gestation period, and it won't happen immediately. There's no doubt in my mind, in 4 or 5 years time, we'll be in a very, very different place than we are now.
I just think, to your earlier note that everybody's talking about advertising now, one thing worth remembering is that the mobile industry is notoriously hype-oriented. So, you know, it's always going to be a problem.
By the end of the discussion, we'll be talking about something else. So if I just come back on this sort of subject of consumer CRM, obviously the advantage of Blink is that you're building this from the ground up, so you really will be able to deliver these stats. But I wonder if, you know, there's this question of scale that we were talking about before the discussion went live, which is that even if what worth is your data to advertisers if you only have a few thousand subscribers?
Yeah, I think that's a very, very, very good point. And I spend most of my life speaking to advertisers and their representatives as well. We believe, personally, without any propaganda or hype, that if a free offering is put in the marketplace, then there's a high propensity for people, especially on pay-as-you-go deals, to switch to something that's an even better pay-as-you-go deal, except what they're paying is nothing. So the point then that we need to address is not necessarily how to scale that to
X million really quick. It's balancing the scaling in the consumer take-up with the advertising spend, because obviously advertisers are paying for that consumer take-up. So we could ship 90 million SIMs to hopefully get a 10% conversion, which would be 9 million 16-24-year-olds, which is all of the 16-24-year-olds in the UK. But then if they all consume a certain amount, then the advertising needs to fund all of that. And if they're spending £10 or £20 a month, it could be 90 or 180 million pounds worth a month of income we need to pay for those guys. So our real issue isn't necessarily how to get people believing that something is good value if it doesn't cost any money. Our issue is actually in making sure that we have some form of lever or valve that controls that take up, and it's incredible. That's my job. And with John Fish, the marketing director, who's here as well, on one hand he's consumer marketing, and the other hand I'm trade marketing, if you like. And so we work very closely together, thank God, to make sure that's very, very easy balance. The advertiser feedback for the low numbers to date hasn't been the issue. What they're not minding that we might take X months to get to X 100,000 people. That's not actually the problem. The problem, or the issue, or the thing that needs addressing is how much will they know about people really that matters to them? What is the most relevant things that matter to them? Behavioural, dynamically updating profiles second by second. If that's a value, then we may be able to solve that. But the actual user take up for us, at the end of the day, if all the advertisers in this room or all the advertisers in the country said, we want you to get to 9 million, we want you to get 100% market share, this is completely outrageous claim, of course, but theoretically, if they said, we want you to have 9 million users and we'll fund that, we'll underwrite that cost, then we can do that. We order 50 million SIM cards and we drop it on the United Kingdom. That's not the issue, really. The biggest issue is the fact that it doesn't work like that. Only some advertisers will get it. Only some advertisers want trackable return investment. Only some actually care about profiling, and some don't. And so there's a limit. And so we have to do this constant balancing act to make sure that one matches the other.
I think Neil has a good point about only some advertisers, especially so far, want all this detail that we all feel that the mobile can deliver. Because so much advertising, you know, how many brands and advertisers actually want or understand more than sort of sex and age?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a really important thing. I think the mobile industry, again, hype and very big into technology, going, oh, we have to do all this really sophisticated stuff before we can get the money. But actually, that's, you know, might not be it. But I think also the other interesting point about, and I think, you know, it's interesting with all these users, but I assume what you're really going to be dependent on also is usage. And that's something that overall with mobile content is worthwhile remembering. Nowadays it's pay per download. Going forward it's going to be, if it's ad funded, it's but paying for using, viewing the pages, using the content. So hopefully that will also mean that we get better content that's used more.
Yes, and indeed. And I would just say on that point that in mobile advertising, really, as we're likely to see things progressing, that what people do with content becomes key. That's kind of what we're talking about, I guess, in some sense of the word. It's not the eyeballs anymore, it's what they do with their fingers afterwards, or what they do in their lives afterwards. And this is this ethereal thing that it's remarkably difficult to track unless you build something from the ground up, as opposed to trying to retrospectively attach all of your silos of information to one another. But in terms of direct marketing, where you have a conversion rate of 1.5, maybe 2%, in terms of television marketing, where you have a different conversion rate than print marketing, the one thing that mobile does have, to its credit, is the fact that if you could target something to a demographic that already saying that they want to receive it, then the chances of people actually accepting something that's relevant and interesting in their lives rises slightly from 1.5% to maybe 3%, maybe 63%. And so, in fact, having 10,000 people on the network could very well equate, if there's a 1% conversion rate from direct marketing, could very well equate to 1 million people if you're a direct marketing list. And that's mathematically correct. So maybe that, and it's the only maths I can do because it's all in tens and zeros, but that's really that's something that I guess a lot of advertisers start to think, well, if they got 500,000 people, but 96% of the people actually respond to advertising, and when we attract those 500,000 people, they're all people that actually want to drink our product or eat our product or so forth, then all of a sudden it becomes slightly more interesting than if we had 50 million people watching our TV show or our TV channels, and we don't know anything about them whatsoever. Makes a bit of a difference.
There you go, that's nice. Statistics, and statistics.
it's all in tens and fives, it's good.
I think I'd add that, while I agree with what Jonathan said, I think one can't underestimate the importance of scale here. I mean, one of the reasons why perhaps traditional advertisers have been slightly late to the party so far is because no one had any scale to offer them. And, you know, they're used to buying marketing and advertising campaigns in the millions and millions of pounds and hit millions and millions of people. They suddenly say, well, actually, I can make you hit five people in London tonight, and I know nothing about them, isn't going to hack it, to be honest. You've got to be talking about millions or at least hundreds of thousands, and that's the challenge which Jonathan has, or anybody who's building this kind of network, is to actually balance the two, and so it is important to have the scale. And
I think to add to that, what I was saying earlier about mobile networks in terms of linking between the data they have about browsing behaviour and the data that advertisers traditionally wanted, which is about age and sex and location as well, sometimes as well. It's a bit like being in a chat room, isn't it? But that's what mobile networks are after. Don't underestimate the information that they already have and stored and use for their browsing services now. Many of them use personalisation platforms. O2 is a network in the UK, serves in excess of 800 million web pages a month to around 7 million users. And it has, each of those users has data in terms of profile of those. It doesn't necessarily know who they are, their age, their sex, their location, but it knows what their browsing behaviour is, and it can serve ads deliberately to those behavioural types. It has scale. It won't, however, have the sort of the full capability that Jonathan will be looking to build. But network operators will still be important in this, certainly for the next for the foreseeable future.
Absolutely. I'm loath to turn this into the Blick show, so I'm just got one more question for Jonathan because it's just
I was relaxing just listening to the other guys speak. Obviously,
it's such a fascinating proposition. I think that it just kind of raises a lot of questions, and one that comes up, which I think deserves a public answer, is if you are targeting 16 to 24 year olds who are looking for free content, that a lot of them are going to be skimmed. So, how much value are those punters to a Nike or a Levi's or whatever?
It's interesting when I don't know who in this building knows the term first card in the wallet. Anyone ever heard of that? It's a phenomenon called first card in the wallet. It's interesting when you first get your first credit card or your first debit card, the brand that is, if it's a Visa or MasterCard, say, regardless of the bank, tests have shown again and again and again, they've run these tests for 11 years, every year the stats are the same, give or take 10%, it's either between 80 or 90% of the people then after the age of 22, 23, whatever, their next credit card that they get tends to have the same logo on that they was their first card in the wallet. That's not just in card terms, that also relates to car terms, mortgage terms, estate agents terms, trainers terms. How many people inside this room still use a product that they used when they were 20 or 21? Hands up. How many people actually still consume the product? Okay, so what's that? Maybe 40%, 50% of the room? I think adding here.
This math is brilliant, isn't it?
The thank you from O2, official he's still on O2 after all these years.
He represents 58 million subscribers.
He's still like paying for phone bills. Crazy. So if you guys actually still use those products, I think one of the things for the skint generation, if you like, which I don't call it myself, but I think these are tastemakers. a lot of the 16 to 24 year olds, which I think we'll all agree we're not necessarily in the target demographic, but with all due respect to us all, including myself, in the 16 to 24 year old age group, this is a chance for advertisers to actually influence their lives greatly. And the second piece of official answer, because it was requiring a public answer, is that if they're not spending, they might be less well off than us, but if they're spending £15 a month or £10 a month or £20 a month on a phone bill, then that surely does equate to an opportunity income for the brands if they weren't paying £10, £15, £20 a phone bill. That's the official answer. I actually think that the first tastemaker, trendsetter, influencer answer is critical, especially seeing as we're going 16 to 24. This isn't 16 to 18-year-olds. Some of these 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds are starting relationships, they're starting to rent flats, they're starting to buy flats. They're starting to get finance agreements on cars. They're most certainly starting to get credit card agreements. Now, this is, now it's out of the realms of propaganda and the realms of hype. This is just the way things are. And we hope that some of the brands actually want to get to those people early. But then, as Jessica said as well, some of these guys, this is relevant to, and some aren't. This isn't. We most certainly will never take the whole market share of either advertisers or users. But any user that doesn't want to pay for anything, and any brand that actually wants to know where their money's going, we will work for. And the ones that don't, don't.
But isn't it the case, though, also that younger users are sort of more reluctant to get influencers necessarily from ads than they are to get influencers from the other cool people, the cool teenagers around them? And will they be the ones that don't have enough money for their phone bill and have enough money to buy trainers, etc.?
Yeah, I think it's down to what ads are. If an ad is, this Honda Civic that's really cool, buy it. Or if the ad is, what do you prefer, Nike or Adidas? That's the ad. Like, this is new to all of you guys. This doesn't exist, by the way, right now. Just imagine this. Do you prefer Fiat or Honda? Advert number one. I prefer Fiat. Or do you prefer blue Fiats? Or look at this test ride footage on MMS. What do you like? Do you like it? Here's a Diet Coke hunk. Is he hot or not? Respond. This is new advertising, right? So I think, actually, the people in the trendsetting world who actually show their mates stuff and go, check out this, and by the way, if you take my phone into McDonald's, I get a 2-for-1 Big Mac. This actually uses the peer pressure and the social anti-stigma quite carefully. So I don't think that adverts that are Fiat, brought to you by, isn't the actual most effective way forward. Maybe we actually need to readdress advertising formats and creativity. Because you're absolutely right. These guys aren't necessarily going to respond to something which is like a TV advert, which now, of course, we can all fast forward through.
And now, a message from Dotmobi, the sponsors of Chinwag Live Mobile Metamorphosis. 4 phones are sold for every PC sold. That means more people access the internet via mobiles than ever. Reach that audience with Dotmobi. Go online to visit dotmobi.mobi. That's Dotmobi. Period MOBI. In other words, dotmobi.mobi.